Unreserved Immigrant is a podcast that explores life as an immigrant in a foreign country. We explore the role of culture, work, and family as it relates to identity. Our guests range from founders, home executives, medical professionals, construction workers, musicians, maids, corporate specialists, and so forth. Unreserved Immigrant is a Sniper Wolf production.
Welcome to today's episode. Today we are speaking to Sipiwe. Sipiwe is based in Germany. She is a mom of two, a seven-year-old and a three-year-old, going on 13, as she said. And she is involved in the arts. She herself is a DJ, but she also works to promote other artists in Germany. Sipiwe, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Sipiwe, what brings you to Germany?
Okay. So, first of all, that's love, obviously.
It was a man.
Yes. Fell in love with a man. So, my husband is half French, half German. His dad was French. He died. He passed away 4 years ago. And his mom is the German part. So, they basically, the father actually migrated to Germany and met her and got married and all of that. He was doing his internship. They have these, most of the people here that study stuff like being a lawyer, a doctor, or an engineer. He's an engineer himself. They always have a practice semester where they choose countries of their choice and partner countries, South Africa being one of them, with the University of Constance where he went to. And so at that time I was at University of Johannesburg, and so we met when he came to do his practice semester, though we did not meet at like on campus or anything like that. We actually met at in Melville.
Girl, let me just tell you, I went to I lived in Joburg, so Melville on 7th Avenue. Was it 7th Avenue?
What was 7th, it? Yeah.
Yeah, 7th, right? Yeah, so that was my hangout spot.
Yeah, 7th. Yeah, 7th Avenue. Yes. I think every student or every young person has been there once in their life. Yeah, so that was our spot, and that's where we met, and we hit it off about 16 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then we did long distance for a minute, about 5 years. Like, he visited, I visited, and then eventually when we started to, like, start working and all of that, we decided, okay, we have to choose a spot to stay. And so we chose Constance, which is in the south of Germany. Mm-hmm. And that's where we moved to. But it was a five-year plan. Actually, after 5 years, we're supposed to come back and either move to Malawi. Oh, by the way, that's where I'm from.
Goodness. Okay.
Yes, I'm actually Malawian. My dad was a professor. My dad was a professor. He's retired. And my mother was a nurse. So they moved around a lot, yeah.
Okay.
So we moved from Malawi when I was 5 years old. We moved them to Eswatini. That's what it's called now, right? Swaziland. The former, we moved to Eswatini for 5 years, I think.
Can you speak because then we moved to Swat?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this is how I got to Zulu quicker. Okay. Because I had the Eswati background.
Yeah, and then, do you speak any Malawian language?
Yes, of course. I speak. So my mom is Yao, and she's from the southern region. And my dad is Tumbuka, which is part of the Nguni tribe. And from the north, yes.
Can I tell you something about that? My maiden name is Mtila. And no one in South Africa knows what it means. But when I speak to people from, and also we don't have rural areas, but when which is telling. But when I speak to people from Malawi, they know that surname is very common there.
Yes.
And they know they have a meaning for it.
Yeah.
So what is it again? Mtila, but with an M, like Banda, Joyce Banda's maiden.
Joyce Banda, yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, ooh, President Vlad.
This is what I always say. Like, I mean, this is what Shaka did, isn't it? He, like, spread, like, all his people everywhere. Because the language, my father's mother tongue, which is Tumbuka, is very much like Zulu. Like, the names are very similar. Yes. Like, words like Geza and... Yes. Meat like nyama, things like this. So it was actually Siswati and Zulu were easier to pick up than Sotho and Tswana. Mm. But I think once you know more or less all these Nguni languages, like when you have Swahili and Shona and like a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and a little bit of Bemba from Zambia, you can more or less understand everything. That's why I think it's also just easy for South Africa's bordering countries, like people from Zim and people from Malawi and some people from Mozambique, depending on which part of Mozambique they come to, pick up very quickly on the South African languages.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, if you have an ear for it, first of all.
So, born in Malawi, raised Eswatini for
Raised Eswatini for about 5 years, and then my brothers went into boarding school, and I have three older brothers, by the way.
Just like me.
Three older brothers. Yes. Having four fathers, isn't it? Yes. When you're African. Yes. And and then I moved then with my parents and two of our dogs from Eswatini to KZN in Mbange. The best place ever. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Now I see Upapa. Gwase KZN.
Yeah, no, it's a magical place. It's a small town. It was just beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's a very nice place. And my parents still have a house there. They still live there. Mm-hmm. And my brothers then, then South Africa. And then I left South Africa in 2010 to come then to Germany. So I've been here for 10 years.
Okay. And then what were you studying when you were in UJ?
Public relations.
And your husband at that time was also a student in his last exchange year or something like that.
He was in his last exchange year in South Africa, and was more of a practicum because he just worked for a company for 3 months, and we met in the last month, and then he extended his stay for another 3 weeks, I think. And we were just having fun. The idea was never to get married. I mean, it was also easy because I was like, oh yeah, we could do this, because I was like, you're gonna leave us and we carry on with life. Because my whole idea was to, as soon as I finished with my public relations, was to go back to Malawi, because it was just home, and I'd never lived there as a grown-up, and I wanted to be a grown-up in Malawi.
You wanted to serve your country.
Yeah.
And then you fell in love, and you guys decided to live in Germany. So
yes.
How were the first years of your relationship like with all... I mean, I know that there's so many... there's cultural... It's hard to say racial differences, because I don't think there's ever a racial difference. I think there's a cultural difference, which we point to race when we don't understand it, when we don't know what to make of it. So I'll phrase it as, what was the cultural, what were the major stumbling blocks when it came to your cultural differences? I mean, I'm not sure how Germans differ from Brits, which is what I think we as Africans are exposed to, in terms of things like manners and affection and speaking directly or...
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Okay, so it's from from South Africa to Germany, not from Eswatini to South Africa. Mm-hmm. Okay, so from South Africa to Germany, we are very, and I say we because I am a South African citizen as well as a Malawian citizen. I'm not even sure if that's allowed, but I am.
Is this not just a typical foreign statement that you just made?
It is, right? And actually, just speaking quickly on citizenship, in Germany, you basically get like an ID book, like comparison to an ID book as a migrant. And so how it works is that when you come into Germany, first of all, you have, because we were married, we married in South Africa, and then we and then I had stayed until all my papers were ready, and then I moved into Germany. Then you do this course that is called an integration course. Mm-hmm. And I laugh because it's very interesting. So mm-hmm. You do 9 or 10 month program. I only did it for 6 months because it was really late. Okay. So it's a combined cultural and language course. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to applaud them on the fact that they do the language course, because it's not easy to navigate around this country without knowing the language. Yep. You're just easily accepted. You understand everything more openly when you do this course. Integration course.
Yeah.
And then, so it basically teaches you on how to behave as a German person, how to talk German. You do a bit of German history, German culture, how to write a letter to complain, because everybody here complains about everything.
This was basically your Karen training.
Yes. And it's basically like, I mean, I admire them for that they do that to make sure that everybody actually fits in, because they also know that to fit into their country, language and culture is very important. And in South Africa, I guess this is one thing that would be really, it's a model to adapt, because it's just really needed. For every foreigner that comes in, and we take it for granted within our African borders that we're all the same, and we're really not. And I mean, that's the beauty of it, isn't it? Because we take and we share our cultures. And being in Germany, obviously at the beginning, it was really hard to get into the language. Growing up in South Africa, we are just outspoken, very loud, we know ourselves, very confident. And to come with that attitude here, it's like, is it an attitude? To come with that personality
it can be arrogant, hey?
Yes, exactly. They think that you're arrogant, like alone just job applications. You know, we're just so used about writing yourself like, I can do this and this and that and that and that. And for them, it's like, well, just send in your CV and your picture. And in South Africa, that's like also a way of discriminating people, because it's like, why didn't you my picture on my CV? But that's what they request for. And then if they'll have an interview, you don't have to write much about yourself. You don't write anything, Your CV is enough.
Yeah, just your education. I like that. I have a friend who lives in Europe. And one of the things she's mentioned to me is how the same you have to be there. Like she says, she watches us speaking so freely on social media, having different opinions, voicing them. And she says you get ostracized.
You lose friends. I've lost friends in just like basically expressing myself in how I feel about a lot of things. I mean, I'm very active in that way. Like the town that we live in is very small. We used to live like in the busier part of it, because the country is so small. It's like basically maybe right now we live like in the south. Mm-hmm. And Johannesburg CBD, that's like the main town.
Yes.
But for them, it's such a foreign thing for us to live here, because it's more on the countryside. But we need it. My husband and I have a sound system. We needed storage. The kids needed a garden. I was like, we both grew up with gardens. Our children should have a garden. Like, it makes no sense. Stay in the flat. And so I've done a lot of gigs. We have something called Reggae My Garden, where it's actually a protest, but it's a festival, and the sound system is there, and it's obviously different types of reggae artists coming from Jamaica, from Italy, from wherever, and also having residency at a club in town. And so every time a black face is needed for something, it's like, oh, let's call Spoon, that's my nickname. It's like, oh, yeah, let's call Spoon. And for some things, you're just like, guys, sometimes it's just really not okay. And I have to be straight up how I feel right there and then. And it was just like, okay, no, today is not okay. I don't want to talk about Black Lives Matter. Protest all you want. There's enough other black people
this
to choose.
So
you know?
Funny. I don't want to do Black Lives Matter today, guys.
No, but it's... The point is, like, we can do these beautiful protests and everything, and respect to everybody who goes out on the street, it's appreciated. But tomorrow, everything goes back to normal, except for me. I'm still black. I'm still who I am.
You still live your black existence.
Exactly. And tomorrow, all these thousands and thousands of people that were on the street are still going to treat me the same way they treated me before they went to go and protest. So no thank you for that day. Other things, okay. So yeah, the Germans are very, I would say the South Germans, because that's what I mostly interact with. They are just a very special breed. Like, you know, there's certain things in Germany, like there used to be a rule that between 12 and 2, you're not allowed to do things like vacuum or mow the lawn or make noise because it's nap time.
Oh my goodness. It's like there's a matron over the region.
Yeah.
This is
and everybody follows suit. Everybody, because we
had rest in boarding school, and it was from after lunch to 2:30. So when you say that you can just declare this over many households, adult homes.
And it's a known thing. And living in a flat before, like your neighbors would actually really knock on the door and be like, do you know that in Germany between this and this time, you should not be doing this and this and this? I mean, I think the law has changed now that you can carry on, but should somebody complain, you have to stop because you're disturbing the peace.
Yes. Yeah.
These things also shape you and how you carry on. And one of the reasons I knew we could not stay in that flat anymore was I cannot spend the whole day telling my kids to be quiet and don't run around and don't do this and don't do that. Like the neighbor, don't touch the neighbor's door, raising kids without a nanny in Germany.
Oh my gosh. So let's talk about raising kids in Germany, just in general. I'm trying to understand my German friends. I'm trying to connect why they are, what you're saying with the way they are. So it's very militant, disciplined.
Yes. So first of all, something that's, there's a lot of things that raising kids here is obviously inarguable. Stuff like safety and education and stuff like that. I would say those are the big positives. One of the
children's
reasons why we're
rights are good.
Because looking at my brothers and how much they pay for private schools and also how they limit themselves as to the amount of children they're going to have just because of finances, it's crippling.
And your brothers being in Africa?
My three older brothers still live in South Africa, Pietermaritzburg, Pretoria, and Johannesburg.
Okay.
Yeah, they all have kids. My niece, she lives in Cape Town. She's finished with university and works already. And the rest are my nephews. One is in high school and the other two are still in primary school. So that's rough in terms of school fees. Like respect to you guys and all you have to do with that. And this, you mentioned that one of your German friends, just to try and understand this militant raising of kids, he or she probably does that perfectly in South Africa because she can manage it. I feel like most of the kids here are basically, it's really a lot. I don't have to tell you personally twice what it's like to raise kids. I just only still, up until now, we only have two, and it's a lot of work. And the minute you get the baby, like you get a midwife that comes to your house once a week to take care of you and basically see that everything's okay, your doctor's appointments, you can basically choose to alternate if you want to see only your midwife or only doctor's appointments. But one of the first things they tell you is stuff like, you have to feed your baby every 4 hours. Like, don't break this pot. And I'm like, yeah, but if I'm hungry, I just open the fridge and I get what I want. Let the babies.
You have so many opinions, ma'am.
So, I have to put the baby on the breast, don't I?
If they don't care for that, do you think you're the first?
And it's like you're raising your child to survive.
Can you see how it's very like our mothers, like back in the day? You didn't question.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
This is the rule. In a lot of ways, I thought they would be beyond that. They'd be advanced.
Yeah.
But they're advanced in their schooling and technology. But when it comes to social,
they just raise this. I mean, I breastfed my son for 2.5 years and my daughter for 1.5. Probably our third baby, I'll only do it for 6 months. I mean, it takes a toll on you.
You
have the house to run. We got specifically a bigger house so I could have, we could have an office upstairs and a studio downstairs. And because I work from home, the company is from, I work from home. Mm-hmm. And having the kids being back, I mean, school closes at 12. I mean, how does school finish at 12? And there's no extramural activities. You have to make sure
you have to outsource that.
You do. And but that's the lifestyle here. Mm. You choose your clubs, and then it's like a soccer club or like a music school, okay, and whatever. Yeah, and then you have to arrange yourself through that. And we are, I guess, we are fortunate enough to have my husband's mom. She lives quite close to us, and so she basically helps when I have gigs in Italy or wherever, or I have to be with a client in Belgium or whatever. Then she takes the kids, and my husband and I then would go where we have to be. But I feel sorry for friends, and I see friends who really struggle. It's such a cliche thing to say, but you also see a lot of couples breaking up because the load is just too much.
I think for us in South Africa, well, when you, the sports thing is starting to happen a lot in the private schools, where like there isn't much variety in the sports selection. Just certain sports are no longer like in school. Like, for example, when I grew up, swimming was just part of it. Now I have to pay for swimming lessons. It's so painful. Yeah, and you know, swimming's quite a vital skill. So I have to pay for swimming lessons. Back in the day, gymnastics, there were schools which offered gymnastics. My daughter has to, I have to outsource that. So as you said, South Africa, is our salaries aren't big. All of these extra costs, I think, is very financially taxing. And I think that's why we are having another different kind of pressure, mm-hmm, because there's so much that needs to happen on this salary. So it's causing a lot of stress and tension and divorces. Whereas for you guys, it's more that I don't have hands. So it's not that you don't have the finances, you just don't have the hands.
I have a friend of mine who's, she's German and she's married to a Zimbabwean. Well, they're going through a divorce, but I mean, they both worked full time, which is rare in Germany, first of all, for both, for the husband and wife to work full time, or partners to work full time.
Okay.
Usually it's the mom who works 50%. You do get job offers where they only require you to be there 50% of the time. And they had an au pair. Every year they would get an au pair to come through. And if it was coming from, like, two times they had an au pair from Zimbabwe, and they had one from Cameroon and from Kenya, because that's, in itself, having a young girl in the house is cheaper than having a full-time
someone come in. So don't you feel like, even though we make the decision to have two kids in South Africa because of finances, you guys also end up making the decision to have two kids because... Well, you literally have to raise them by yourself.
I mean, we travel home. When I say we travel home, we come home to South Africa because most of my immediate family is there once every year. And it's such a relief just to be at home.
And like, hand over the baby.
I am not getting up bathing babies and changing diapers. Like, everybody's hands on, you know. Whereas here, you can go out with friends and whatever, and your baby makes a mess in the diaper. They're like, oh, you have to change the diaper. Where for us socially, it's like, oh, come, what's up? What's going on here? And you do it. And so it's interesting.
So are you going to have any more kids, or are you like, oh?
Yes, of course. No, not done. No, we're not done. I would love to be an old mom. So probably when I turn 40, we'll have our last.
You are the one who's taught me this term of old mom. And as though it's like aspirational. I want to be an old mom. Woo-hoo.
Old mom, yeah.
Yeah, but there are a lot of old moms now. I have one of my close friends is 38 and she doesn't have a child, and she plans on being an old mom. So So I'm going to point her to this podcast. I'll be like, hey, listen to another old mom speaking. Okay, so how has career been like? How did you forge this career? Because you said you were studying PR.
Basically, in the town that we live in. So what you need to know is that we live in Germany, but my husband works in Switzerland because he's a mechanical engineer, and the work that he does, they design compressors or something like this. Yeah, not something like this. They do design compressors. And he's one of the designers. Mm-hmm. And so it's about... Yeah, when we lived in the city, so to call it, in the town, he traveled like 30 minutes, so now he travels about 50 minutes one way.
50?
Yeah, 50.
There's a border, right? And how's the border in the mornings?
The border is hectic in the mornings because of all the trucks. You know, a lot of things in Europe is still transported on the roads. Mm-hmm. So that can be rough, but it's just like normal traffic. If you miss that first 10 minutes, you're kind of like screwed.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, so it's just about timing. But the way we always compare it is like if we had lived in South Africa and we lived in Johannesburg or Durban or Cape Town, we would still live on the outskirts of the city and have to still travel a good distance to get to work and schools and all of this. So we justified like that.
Mm-hmm.
So PR, as you know, has a lot to do with a lot of writing and text and all of this. And when I had arrived making like applications, it's admin for a company to translate all my documents. And if I have to do it myself, it takes a while. And even though it was done and translated and given, it was still not sufficient.
Okay.
Or you always had to like restudy or like do more on top of what you did. And I wanted to lean towards, I mean, before I was working for David Krutz, I don't know if you know.
No.
David Krutz. He has a gallery in Johannesburg and Cape Town and I think New York. Working in that form of like traditional visual art and everything was nice, but I really wanted to lean towards music. Obviously, it's more, for me, it fits. It's just mine.
Yes.
And yeah, it was easy then to just gravitate towards that. There was a friend who was working at the theater and he was doing the music in Constance where we stay. And I was like, oh, since you're here, he's French. Mm-hmm. I was like, since you're here, let's do a couple of gigs at a couple of the venues. So I was already doing it privately for fun. And I was like, I could actually make money off this. On the other hand, I still had to book for ourselves. Our crew is called Four Corners Crew and it's basically drum and bass and jungle music and dubwise. And so when I was doing bookings for myself, I was like, I could do this for other artists as well. And that's just how I came birth to Salma Bookings, which is the company that I have at the moment. Obviously now with COVID, it's been very hard. It's been really hard for my clients because the Italian government does not really offer much for artists. I mean, artists that are like huge and paying taxes and stuff like that, it's been easier for them. As not that my clients don't pay taxes, but I mean, for like little gigs where you're required to be there for an hour, you just like take, it's been hard.
Well, when you say you're Italian, do you work mainly with the Italian clients?
I have a client from a South African client, Res Prof, and he lives in Cape Town. And then I have two clients from Italy, but the one is Italian Senegalese, and he's in Italy. And then Wicked and Bonnie, they're in Italy. And then Lee Scratch Perry, who's Jamaican. But he works between Jamaica and Switzerland. And then a client from Bristol in England, Indian man, and that he's really cool.
Oh gosh, you've got such cool names.
Yeah, I know. They're amazing. They're really just totally different and experimental, and it's good to have them on board.
Do you feel like in your space, your race matters? Like you're in the music industry, it is a creative industry. And you're black. Do you feel like, is there like almost an automatic trust? Because I feel like we are known for the arts. I feel like there's this respect black people have when it comes to creativity. Just the way that like the Asians are respected. Automatically you assume an Asian will know the math.
Yeah. Sorry, I absolutely beg to differ on that topic.
Okay.
Because on this part of the world, Africans are just known to not pay their bills for their venue, not to do this right. I mean, it depends in what type of art we're in, right?
Yes.
I mean, the Huma Segelas, may rest in peace, and all these big artists are obviously respected totally different to the upcoming artists, which are all my artists, except for Lee Scratch, who's already out there. And first of all, being black, being female, having this voice that I have and just trying to navigate this boys club industry.
Okay.
And I say that because it's exactly what it is. It's hard. It's a lot of ass kissing. You have to show up. You have to always negotiate the price. Like, it's never good enough.
So exhausting.
It's very, very tedious.
Prices is exhausting.
Yes, it is. Okay. It's like it's art accepted for what it is. And these are people who spend time in recording studios on marketing material, and they're all on Spotify, and they push for their art. Yeah. And it's just really difficult.
So now with the pandemic, did you feel perhaps for the first time that maybe I would have been better off if I were at home? What happened to me was I thought, imagine now if you had, this was like your first year in, say, the US or Canada, wherever I've been thinking of moving, and this happened. I feel like people who were not in their home country, who were still working on visas, felt displaced. A lot of families were actually separated as well. Like now, if you had gone on holiday home, you could not return back to your job.
You would
lose out on your visa. Your visa status would be affected. Were you unsettled in any way, or have you been there long enough to feel like you are in the right place?
To be honest, when I look at, I mean, I have family in Australia, in the US, in Malawi, in South Africa, in Zimbabwe, in England, and friends also in a lot of places in the world. And when I look at everything that they're facing, Germany is the best place to be at this point in time, purely because its government supports the people in every way possible. I mean, they put out a 9,000 euro relief. You could apply for it and you would get it in your bank account the following day to basically sustain your business. It's something I didn't apply for because in the end, obviously, you have to pay it back somehow when your business
is basically taken off.
Exactly. So it's something we did not necessarily need. There were times where I had thought, should I take this and actually divided with my clients just so they can get onto their feet, but they had to look into their governments and their pockets and what they had in reserve to basically be afloat, you know. And this was the positive part. The hardest part is the uncertainty of, when will I go home again? When will my brother, when can my brothers visit again? My dad is gravely ill, and although we travel home every once a year, I'd been, like, last year I think I went home like 3 times just to see him. And this is the hardest part of being so far from home. But in terms of work, of the school system, of the support you get financially, and I mean, to be quite honest, Germany was on lockdown, but you could still take walks, you could still go outside.
It wasn't hard like ours. Ours was hard.
No, and we had alcohol and cigarettes. I mean, it's a bare necessity, isn't it?
I guess that takes the edge off for a lot of people.
Yes, yes.
Just to close off, how would you sum up your experience as an African who has, gosh, you've lived in so many places.
Yeah.
And yet you still identify and feel as an African. What would you say really is the thing that still anchors you and enforces that belief, apart from the color of your skin?
Apart from the color of my skin, I was just about to say, I think the color of my skin just stamps it. This is what reinforces me that I will always be African. When I look at white counterparts that, like, that you meet in church, the South Africans that you meet in church or whatever, I mean, they do everything to badmouth South Africa on all these portals. You have, like, these mommy groups on Facebook. They complain about things that don't need to be complained about, about delivery and service in South Africa. It's like,
and everything is ANC. It's not an individual, or it's ANC.
No, it's never. And for this, I will always feel, I mean, Pumsa, this sounds so cliche. I constantly carry the entire continent on my back. I get people who approach me and they'll be like, you know, in Congo, there was a war. And what do you have to say about that?
Just wait. I need to laugh it off. You've probably never even been to Congo.
I have never been to West Africa, for goodness sake. Like, you know, ask me about maybe Namibia or Botswana or Zimbabwe. I have so much to tell you, but you're asking me about things that are happening in Rwanda. Of course, I have knowledge. It sounds idiotic and
It's like, do you know Temba from Joburg?
Yeah. It's like, oh, I know a Malawian And he lives in Cape Town on the street. Do you know him? Yes, of course I do. I know the whole country. All our 81 million people. Yeah. I know them all.
Do they even have any idea how many languages we have in Africa, let alone the countries?
No, you speak that click language, correct? Mm. I'd be like, yeah, can you say something? And then I'd be like, no, say something in French. Can you sing me a song in French? Or, yeah, no, it's intense. And then their hair is always a question. I mean, you saw me yesterday with my hair so short. You see me 2 days later and it's long and you asking me questions. Oh, how did you get it so long? Like, oh, I have like this portion that I rub in my hair. And this is 2020. 2020, Pumza. And people are still asking these questions.
Okay, so you are African and you remember because of the way you look.
No way.
No matter where you live, no matter what language you learn, you will not forget because of the color of your skin.
Yeah, and I'm constantly reminded.
I was about to say, I guess the world won't forget either because of the color of your skin. And we shouldn't. It's fine.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's good to know. Like, I never feel lost. I'm never lost. When people look at me strangely, when people talk louder because they think I don't understand the language or I'm stupid because I pronounce something wrong, I'm like, oh, it's me. It's the black one. Yes, and I will get louder.
Okay, cool. Oh, I wish we had more time. I wish we had more time.
I
so want to follow this up. Maybe we'll do, we'll talk again, maybe in like episode
Season
10
two.
Or 11. But like, I enjoyed this. Okay, it was a pleasure. Have a great afternoon with your kids. And guys, thank you for listening. Remember that I have 5 episodes before this. You can find them on Spotify and iTunes. And cheers, Simpiwe. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
It's Piwe, by the way.
It's Piwe, yes. I'm like, it's not Simpiwe. It's Piwe. Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, remember to subscribe and share. If you would like Sniper Wolf Media to tell your story, or perhaps you'd like to donate or partner with us, please send an email to janice@sniperwolfmedia.co.za. We would love to tell your story.